The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Sometimes I say like that it feels like the first noble truth contains the other three. That somehow, if we can open to dukkha, that's no joke. And it's easy to get familiar with suffering in a way and say, oh yeah, I get the truth of dukkha. But do we realize it in the sense that Sedgwick talked about realization of making something real. A friend who recently finished a long retreat said during this time, sometimes the memory of the suffering of a pet from decades ago would just like pierce her heart. And there's a bumper sticker that says, I break for suffering. But the question is, like, would we ever hit the accelerator, right? It's a major project to open to one's own suffering, major. But sometimes the suffering of the other is even more evocative. Yeah. It can be evocative in ways that open us to deep compassion. Yeah, so we see the suffering of a loved one, and the heart just naturally opens. And sometimes, of course, our care gets tangled up with our clinging and our control and with our preferences or our needs. And we have entrusted our heart to another by choice or by birth. And what that means is that, in a sense, all of their suffering feels like our business. Yeah. As a child, the suffering or imperfection of a parent has huge implications for our sense of safety, of protection. And so their pain, their confusion, their greed, their hate is itself destabilizing for the child, right? For ourselves as children. And there's a kind of there's a deep wobble that can happen in our own heart when we see loved ones in pain, or we see loved ones acting out their own defilements. Yeah. And in a sense, their neurosis could be just a kind of opportunity for our own care, compassion, but their neurosis usually interacts with our neurosis. It's like their clinging tangles with our clinging. Friend, teacher was telling me that, at a family gathering, this is pre-COVID, family gathering with, his family, his wife's family. And he says to his wife, can you believe how my mom's acting? I'm sorry. And his wife says, no, 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 your mom is fine. Can you believe how my mom's acting? Right? This is sort of like, oh yeah, something particular gets evoked in us along these lines of connection, of love, of clinging. And, you know, researchers have done brain imaging, you know, when one person is seeing a loved one suffer, you know, in some way, do a pain task, actually some way of knowing that a loved one is uncomfortable. They're actually part of the research is for the other one to be in some pain. And a lot of our brain lights up regions associated with understanding the state of the other, but also a kind of affective resonance. And some of the same things happen in our brain as if we were in pain. Kitty Sorrow and Tanisra, beloved teachers in this lineage, were monastics for many years, and then left the monastic lineage and have been a couple for a long time now, and still, you know, very obviously serious practitioners, teachers, and they're asked at one point, like, what's it like to be in relationship? And Kitty Sara said, it's like two people under one robe. Yeah. Referring to the monastic experience, two people under one robe. Their goodness, their suffering, all under one robe. And when we see suffering in our own life, it can get us just naturally scrambling to reorder circumstances. Yeah. And when we see suffering of someone close to us, it kind of does the same thing. We habitually move into this mode of just trying to reorder circumstances, but that often means we're trying to reorder them, who they are. And so the compassion, the care becomes entangled. It becomes, it's no longer free. And our aversion or our fear are controlling, that's what's driving the show. We get frustrated, get controlling, and then we try to change them through our own frustration. And, you know, when I think about what do I want in all my relationships? Well, really, I want them all to be arhats, yeah, to be fully enlightened. I get to be a basket of defilements, but they better be deeply enlightened, right? And the greed, the aversion, the delusion, the non-enlightenment I perceived in loved ones is especially evocative for me. It spins me. And on the one hand, I know if I respond to my own suffering in that way, it's totally unproductive, but it's somehow harder to resist interpersonally. Yeah, for their greed, aversion, delusion, not to spin me in a way I know is unproductive. So yeah, may they all be enlightened, right? But then again, in the end, Even if I lived with the Buddha, I know I would get irritated by something, you know? Funny. You know, Lord Buddha, can't you see I'm angry? Yeah. Why are you so calm? There was an interview with a writer who was asked if literature changes people. And the writer said, I don't think people change very much. To the extent that people change at all, it's because of some encounter that has love in it. It's hard to... hard to change. It's hard to grow. We know that. Yeah. Sometimes it happens in a flash, but a lot of times it's very incremental. It's hard to grow. It's hard to change. And if we're going to do it, for sure, love will be involved. Yeah. And the irony, the people we most want to change are the ones we tend to be most enraged by. Yeah. Even if that frustration is subtle, you know. And yet we know anger, aversion, that is the single worst way to support someone in their change, in their evolution. So we're going to have to tolerate some ambivalence, and we're going to have to open our heart to the imperfection of the other. Just in the same way we open our heart to the imperfection of ourselves, compassion is not an insistence that someone change. It's not an insistence that someone change. Deep, deep acceptance, forgiveness. Doesn't mean condoning harm, but forgiveness. And what is forgiveness other than really just understanding their inner life? So we investigate, what does the pain or the neurosis of the other due to your mind? What happens in your heart? What is evoked in perceiving their own dukkha? And what ways does our care and our dependence express itself as compassion, as a kind of generosity of heart? And what ways do the impulses of control get born? Yeah. Last album of his life, Leonard Cohen sang, I wish there was a treaty we could sign. I do not care who takes this bloody hill. I'm angry and I'm tired all the time. I wish there was a treaty. I wish there was a treaty between your love and mine. So may we practice well. See you tomorrow.